Libya's greatest theft wasn't oil, but gold. More than a decade after NATO bombs reduced Libya to ruins, Saif al-Islam Gaddafi has made a demand that Western capitals never expected to hear. Return Libya's stolen gold. Not compensation, not aid, not apologies. Gold. The very reserves Muammar Gaddafi was using to back an African currency. Gold that vanished as jets filled the sky and liberation was declared. Now his son is forcing the question no government in Paris, Washington, or Brussels once asked, where is Libya's gold and who took it? Because if that gold is returned, it wouldn't just rewrite Libya's history, it could expose the real motive behind the 2011 war and unravel one of the West's most guarded secrets. Tonight we uncover the gold trail they hoped the world would forget. And once you hear the full story, you'll understand who actually took Libya's gold, who benefited from it, and why this demand has NATO and France panicking. Let's find out. Chapter 1: The Gold That Made Libya Dangerous. Long before the first NATO jet crossed Libyan airspace, Muammar Gaddafi had already crossed a red line. It wasn't oil, it wasn't terrorism, it was gold. By 2010, Libya had quietly amassed one of the largest gold reserves in Africa, estimated at over 140 tons. But Gaddafi wasn't hoarding it for prestige or security. He had a plan that terrified Western financial powers, a gold-backed African currency, not tied to the US dollar, not controlled by the IMF, not dependent on the euro or the French-backed CFA system. Gold, physical, sovereign, African. With that reserve, Gaddafi was lobbying African leaders to abandon Western-controlled currencies and trade oil, gas, and minerals using a gold dinar. Oil-producing states would be paid in gold. African labor and resources would finally set their own price. To Paris, Washington, and Brussels, this wasn't economic reform. It was financial rebellion. France stood to lose control over the CFA franc system that still tied 14 African nations to French reserves. The dollar's dominance in global energy trade faced a direct challenge. The IMF and World Bank saw a precedent that could spread far beyond Libya. And then something strange happened. Just months after discussions around the gold dinar intensified, Libya was declared a humanitarian emergency. Suddenly, the same country praised for high living standards became a threat to its own people. Suddenly, regime change gained moral urgency. Suddenly, NATO moved fast, very fast, and while the world watched the bombs, something else disappeared. Libya's gold, not destroyed, not accounted for, not recovered, just gone. And today, Saif al-Islam Gaddafi is reopening that file, forcing the world to answer a question it successfully buried in 2011. If the war was about saving civilians, why did Libya's gold vanish the moment the regime fell? And more importantly, who had the power, access, and motive to take it? Before we dive deeper, like this video, subscribe, and personalize the bell icon so you don't miss what this channel is about to uncover. Chapter 2: The Night the Gold Disappeared. Officially, Libya's gold never disappeared. On paper, it sat safely in the vaults of the central bank in Tripoli, tens of billions in reserves, quietly backing the dinar, and, according to many reports, forming the backbone of Gaddafi's plan for an African gold-backed currency, breaking Africa away from Western financial control. But wars don't follow paperwork. As NATO jets roared overhead in 2011 and foreign media framed the chaos as liberation, something else was happening far from the cameras. Away from the explosions, away from the front lines, convoys began moving at night. When the bombs started falling, Libya's central banking system collapsed overnight. Vaults were abandoned, records went dark, and amid the chaos something extraordinary happened. The gold stopped being mentioned, no official NATO report accounted for it. No clear transfer to a successor Libyan government ever appeared. No UN audit resolved its fate. Instead, the narrative shifted, fast. Western media focused on humanitarian intervention, on protecting civilians, on democracy, but never on what was quietly moved while the world was watching explosions instead of balance sheets. Multiple African and Middle Eastern officials later confirmed the same thing privately. The gold was removed during the opening phase of the war, before militias controlled Tripoli, before institutions collapsed, before anyone was officially in charge. That timing matters, because to access and extract sovereign gold during active conflict, three things are required: military access, air superiority, institutional cover. In 2011, only one alliance had all three. And suddenly, flights left Libya that were never publicly logged. Assets were temporarily secured, and NATO forces declared the mission complete. But Libya never got its gold back. The question is no longer whether the gold was taken. The real question is who moved it first, and why. Because what we're about to uncover next isn't speculation. It's the paper trail that leads straight into Europe's financial core. And once you see that trail, you'll understand why this story was never meant to surface. Chapter 3: Who Had Access, Power and Silence. Gold does not disappear by accident. Especially not state gold, guarded, recorded, tracked and watched. For Libya's gold to vanish, three things were required: access, power and absolute silence. And very few actors on Earth possessed all three. When Tripoli fell into chaos in 2011, Libya's central institutions collapsed almost overnight. But one place was secured faster than any hospital, parliament, or bank: the routes out of Libya. NATO controlled the skies, Western-backed forces controlled the ports, and intelligence agencies flooded the country under the banner of stabilization. This meant something critical. Nothing large left Libya without being seen. Gold does not move in suitcases. It moves in protected convoys, secured cargo holds, and coordinated clearances. Any transfer required authorization or force powerful enough to bypass it. And only one coalition had that reach. Western governments insist they never touched Libya's reserves. They say the gold vanished amid chaos. But chaos doesn't erase flight logs. Chaos doesn't override customs records. Chaos doesn't silence every official involved, unless someone orders that silence. Libyan banking officials who once handled reserve documentation were removed, disappeared, or forced into exile. Records went missing. Audits were never completed, and international inquiries quietly stalled. Why? Because asking too loudly invites an uncomfortable reality: that the same powers who claimed to be protecting Libya's assets were the only ones capable of moving them. France had motive, NATO had control, global finance had incentive, and silence. Silence was guaranteed by diplomatic immunity, classified operations, and media alignment. This wasn't a robbery carried out in the dark, it was a removal carried out in plain sight, protected by power. But here's the mistake they didn't anticipate: Saif al-Islam Gaddafi is not asking politely. By naming the gold, by naming the demand, he is reopening files that were never meant to breathe again. And now the question isn't whether Libya's gold was taken. The question is, what happens if the evidence finally surfaces and the silence breaks? Chapter 4: Follow the Beneficiaries. Gold does not simply vanish. When billions disappear, someone becomes richer, more powerful, and more protected. After Libya collapsed, its financial silence was immediate. Statements stopped, audits disappeared. Questions were buried under rubble, and while Western leaders spoke of democracy and stabilization, something very quiet was happening behind closed vaults and balance sheets. Across Europe, banks that once had limited exposure to Libyan funds suddenly showed unusual liquidity. Gold markets stabilized at critical moments. Currency pressures eased, not publicly explained, not officially connected, just conveniently timed. At the same time, Libya's frozen assets were being managed, not returned, not accounted for, but redistributed through legal fog. This is where the story turns uncomfortable. Because the gold wasn't stolen by chaos, it was absorbed by structure. Institutions that specialize in custody, reserves, and temporary safeguards. Governments that had the legal authority to seize assets during conflict. And allies who controlled the post-war financial narrative. No vault was broken into. No convoy was hijacked on camera. This was not a crime scene. It was a transfer. And transfers leave paperwork, hidden in EU reports, IMF disclosures, and central bank opacity rules are gaps that grow wider the deeper you look. Amounts don't match, dates don't align, statements contradict themselves. Libya was told its gold was secured. But secured for whom? Because while Libya collapsed into militia rule and darkness, others gained financial breathing room at a critical global moment. And that raises the most dangerous question of all. If Libya's gold didn't disappear, and it wasn't destroyed, and it wasn't lost, then who is still sitting on it today? And why are they refusing to talk? Because the next chapter doesn't follow the gold anymore. It follows the silence. Chapter 5, Saif Gaddafi's demand changes everything. For more than a decade, Libya's stolen gold was treated as an untouchable subject. Too sensitive, too dangerous, too inconvenient. Until now, when Saif al-Islam Gaddafi publicly demanded the return of Libya's gold, it wasn't a symbolic statement, it was a direct challenge to the foundations of the 2011 war narrative. Because demanding the gold does something no speech, protest, or lawsuit ever could. It forces the world to revisit what was taken and why. This is no longer about Gaddafi's past, it's about evidence. Gold does not disappear by accident. Gold leaves a trail through vaults, shipping manifests, financial clearinghouses, and state-level approvals. For Saif, reclaiming the gold isn't only about money, it's about forcing accountability onto the global stage. If NATO and France agree to return it, they silently admit it was taken. If they refuse, they expose the lie that Libya's collapse was ever about protecting civilians. That's the trap Saif has set. And this is why Western responses have been deliberately vague. No flat denials, no clear explanations. Only silence, deflection, and carefully worded statements about complex post-conflict realities. Because answering a simple question far more than anyone is prepared for. Where is Libya's gold? Would unravel. And now, something remarkable is happening inside Libya itself. Saif's demand has unified voices that rarely agree. Tribes, former officials, young Libyans who never lived under his father, but understand one thing clearly. Libya was stripped, not saved. This demand has reframed the war, not as a humanitarian intervention, but as Africa's most expensive daylight robbery. And if Saif succeeds, if records surface, vaults are named, transfers exposed, this won't end with Libya. It will force a reckoning across Africa, across NATO, across Europe. Because once one country proves its wealth was stolen under the cover of liberation, every other intervention comes under suspicion. This is why the pressure is building, this is why the silence is growing louder. And this is why Saif Gaddafi's demand changes everything. Because the moment Libya's gold is acknowledged, the real story of the war can no longer be contained. If the gold comes back, the truth comes with it. If Libya's gold is returned, it won't just restore lost wealth, it will restore memory. Because gold doesn't disappear by accident, it moves through hands with power, through systems designed to leave no fingerprints, protected by silence that only empires can afford. If that gold comes back, the story of 2011 changes forever. The war stops being about humanitarian intervention and becomes what many always suspected, a calculated operation to stop an African economic rebellion before it began. That is why this demand matters, not just for Libya, but for Africa. Because if Libya proves its gold was stolen, then every African nation that lost resources under intervention, stabilization, or aid will start asking the same question. What was taken from us, and who is still holding it? Saif al-Islam Gaddafi's demand isn't a threat, it's a test. A test of whether the truth can still surface, or whether silence will be defended at any cost. So now the question comes to you. If NATO and France have nothing to hide, why are they so afraid of this demand? Share your thoughts in the comments. Like this video so more people see it. Subscribe to Afro Culture Diary and turn on notifications, because the next chapter of this story about where the gold leads next is already unfolding. If the gold comes back, the truth comes with it.